I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Later in the program, journalists under attack in Mexico and Venezuela. Our international anchor buddies tell us about it. That's coming up next. But first, the presidential election has started early, and candidates and political parties are already looking for the next source of undecided voters. This environment has brought new attention to one vulnerable constituency, people with diminished mental capacity. Several states are considering laws that broaden or limit the voting rights of the mentally impaired. But who has the right to decide who is mentally fit to vote? Joining us now to talk about this is Bob Carolla of the National Alliance on Mental Illness. He oversees their Stigma Buster program. He's on the line from San Diego. And joining us in the studio is NPR science correspondent Joe Shapiro. Welcome, gentlemen. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, Mr. Carolla, older Americans have always been more likely to vote than younger Americans. Why do you think this issue is coming up now?
Well, it's actually been simmering at local levels and in some states for quite a while, in states like New Jersey and in Maine. That it's focused primarily on people with mental illnesses initially. But I think that as elections get closer, and you know, we can look at the 2000 presidential election and seeing how narrowly Florida could have swung in terms of determining our next president. I think there's been also greater focus on especially the elderly who may be in assisted living or nursing homes for physical infirmities, but also because of the aging process, there's I think the popular perception sometimes is that you know, they're not of a frame of mind to make informed decisions, which is not true both for that category as well as for people with mental illnesses.
But you figure just because the elections are so close now, our national elections are so closely decided that every vote counts, and now you feel that that's why there's additional scrutiny on, you know, a pretty small part of the population. Well, actually, maybe let's talk about that. Maybe it's not such a small part of the population. The Alzheimer's Association estimates that about 4.9 million Americans have Alzheimer's. And is that number growing as a percentage of the population, or are we just more aware of people with Alzheimer's?
No, it's actually growing quite a bit as we have an aging society, and people are living longer. And as you live longer, you have a greater chance of having some dementia. And of people who live in assisted living, for example, and assisted living is seen as a place where people who are not as incapacitated live. You know, they're more independent than, say, somebody who'd be at a nursing home. But even in assisted living, half of the people in assisted living have some dementia. Some have pretty advanced dementia. So there is this population of people, again, older people who do tend to vote in higher percentages than younger people. A lot of people who are getting older, those numbers are growing, and they're people with dementia. And then you get these tricky questions of, can people make a good decision?
Now, clearly, I think everybody would recognize that you can have a physical impairment and still be perfectly mentally capable of making a good decision about voting. But with dementia, is the opposite true, that you may have a mental impairment that might not show up in a physical disability?
Sure. But it's also it's hard to measure what is dementia.
What is the test? How do you measure it?
Well, it's hard to measure it. You can be very clear on one moment and not so clear on another. I'll tell you a story about my mother. In 2004, she moved from her home in Washington, D.C., where she'd lived for 50 years. She moved to another state. She moved to Maryland. She's been passionate about politics her entire life. My mother has dementia. We got an absentee ballot for her. She's voting in a new state. She reads the newspaper now, but she has trouble following the news. I didn't know. Did she really know what was going on? She looked at the ballot. She knew these candidates. She knew who'd been in the House of Representatives and who was now running for the Senate. She knew her state. She knew the state legislator in this district in Maryland, even though she had not only lived there for a year, because she'd just been following the news for all these years. And it came to her, and she knew who she wanted to vote for. The candidates she didn't know, she didn't vote. The other day, she didn't know how old she was. But this stuff that she'd followed for years popped up, she knew how she won the vote. If you gave her a test for dementia, you'd say, nah, she can't vote. But when that ballot was in front of her, she knew even the state representative in this place that she just moved into.
We're talking about the voting rights of Americans with mental impairments. With us in the studio is NPR science correspondent Joe Shapiro, and also joining us is Bob Carolla of the National Alliance on Mental Illness.
If I could add in, too, we're talking about one of the fundamental rights of an individual. It goes to individual dignity, but also the ability to participate in our broader community, whether it's at the local level or the national level. And one of the most vital links to both mental health as well as also physical health is keeping connected, retaining that community connection. If you go to a assisted living facility or even a nursing home, there often is a current events discussion session. And to the degree that people are concerned about what happens with what is viewed as a marginalized population, it's the concern is over over manipulation or undue influence by oftentimes by campaign workers for a candidate looking to swing an election.
Sure, the people are concerned about the integrity of the process.
Right. But
so do you don't think that's a legitimate concern?
Well, do you end up restricting the right to vote for the person who is being manipulated? Or do you actually need to focus on the person who is abusing that individual's own right?
In this, Mr. McCullough, in states where people are interested in taking a look at this issue anew about the question of whether there's an impairment and whether people with any form of diagnosed impairment, whether it's mental illness or dementia, should be allowed to vote, what are they thinking about doing? Is there a test, or is people thinking about having some sort of a test, like in the way that there would be a driving test to see whether your eyesight is still adequate to the task of driving? Is that what we're talking about?
Well, the American Bar Association currently has a committee looking at the question of whether there should be a standard. And I think what they may be leaning towards is something that tries to test whether or not there's a specific desire to participate in the voting process. And that's regardless of whether or not that is expressed verbally with help or without help. But keep in mind, we don't have many tests other than needing to be age 18 to allow someone to vote. We don't look at the motivations, the emotions, or the reasons why an individual may want to vote across the population. There is no literacy test anymore, in part because that used to be imposed for racial reasons to discourage voting. About 15% of the American population votes in any election. We should actually be looking at ways to increase that participation rather than decreasing it.
What about the question of people with a—I know we've been focusing on mainly the question of sort of diminished capacity due to aging, but what about—I think, obviously, Mr. Carolla, you're also interested in the question of mental illness. Are there specific efforts being made to ask people who have a diagnosed mental illness not to vote, or people who've been diagnosed with severe mental illness, or perhaps people who've been adjudged to be not responsible for criminal acts due to their mental illness?
Well, it's actually the direction has been not so much to restrict it, because it comes as a surprise to many people that there are already restrictions in place. Some of it is through constitutional provisions and state constitutions that date back to the 19th century and speak in terms of insanity, idiocy, or actually even imbecility, terms that no longer have much meaning in current language. And when they did exist, it was really more as a legal term, and certainly not today as any kind of having any kind of medical significance.
We're talking about the voting rights of Americans with various forms of mental impairment. With us to talk about this is Bob Carolla of the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and in the studio, NPR science reporter Joe Shapiro. Joe, what about the hundreds of thousands of Americans living in nursing homes? How do those institutions facilitate the voting process for their residents? And are there concerns, as we've been discussing, about whether these residents are subject to manipulation?
That's been a question. Are they manipulated by family or campaign workers to vote in ways that maybe they wouldn't want to vote? But I did an interview in 2004 with Dr. Jason Karlowish at the University of Pennsylvania, and he's done some studies of this. He's been very interested in this. And he did a survey of nursing homes in Philadelphia, and he found actually the bigger issue was that it's often nursing home staff who decide who gets the vote and who doesn't. He found that was the case in about 80% of these nursing homes that he surveyed. The staff almost arbitrarily decide whether somebody's competent to vote, and it might be on something very subjective. They might ask, who's running in this race, or what are the issues? And nothing that really determines competency. You know, Bob was talking about how often we can there's this danger that we pass laws and we really end up holding people to higher standards if they have a disability or if they have dementia.
It's an important and complex issue, and I thank you both for speaking with us. Joe Shapiro is an NPR science correspondent. He joined us here in the studio. And Bob Carolla, he oversees the Stigma Buster program at the National Alliance on Mental Illness. He joined us by phone from San Diego. Gentlemen, thank you both so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.